Well, before we get into the meat and potatoes of today's episode, I guess we should talk a little bit about some of the other things that have been happening in Pixel World this week.
Yes, Pixel World. Monday.
the new theme park. Pixel World.
What? Pixel World. That's... I still think Google should expand. This is a whole other theory about how Google could leverage its AI work on interactive entertainment, starting by making a dog but you can query like Sony's Aibo, but you expand it into a theme park, which I think is inevitable for Alphabet to get into a Disney era like parks and entertainment division. But again, long story.
How inevitable? Like 20 years from now inevitable, or like this is definitely Sergey's current project inevitable?
I mean, we were promised an island by Larry Page where there are no laws. So it's trajectory-wise, it's not too far, I don't think.
Anyways, yes. Feature Drops.
Which, how do you feel about that name? Feature Drops.
I mean, Pixel it describes what it is. Right?
Yeah.
Kind of. That might actually be the main part of this conversation. Does it actually describe what it is? Because as Ben pointed out very aptly, it's not exactly a singular drop. Like, this announcement is not one, I guess, it's not like a, you know, it's not like an airdrop in Call of Duty, you know? It's more like an airdrop that kind of just blew up on its way down and just is going to land in 100 different places and tiny little pieces everywhere, because all of these feature drops are basically like, you know, they're scattered across app updates and system level updates and updates. And it's like,
which perfectly reflects how like Google works as a company and all their different teams and divisions. But at the same time, I was thinking about it from the context of like an artist dropping a new single and whatnot. The gaming thing is interesting. I didn't think about that. But anyways, yeah, in that context, it shows a bit of a unification of Google coming together for its Pixel phone, which is interesting. Because I know David Ruddick at Android Police a few weeks ago was talking about the idea of what Google needs to do to succeed, for its hardware line to succeed. And I think his basic takeaway was they need to get all their divisions to fully support Pixel. And I kind of see that here. Like, instead of all these teams working for one major release, you have them, Google's guidance was every 3 months, maybe, give or take. We could have these teams rallying around the Pixel every 3 months for new features. And that definitely keeps the excitement about phones, about every time there's a feature drop, maybe it could coincide with a uptick in sales or something like that. But there's definitely a real centralization that Google's doing for this.
To me, I mean, there's a couple points here. One of the things I think about is this Google trying to make the best of a unfortunate situation, which is that I guess their development of services, features, applications is so scattered that it's pretty much impossible across the company to time everything to launch alongside the Pixel every year. You know, it's a lot less structured development cycles than Apple, for instance, which they're launching major features pretty consistently on an annual cycle. And then there's basically a lull for several months, at least on the software side of things. Whereas, you know, Apple or Google's software and services are just so scattered, and, you know, new apps, new services, major features in apps across Google's entire lineup are just pretty much scattered throughout the whole year. With, you know, obviously Android does have its big annual, but even then, you know, Google's first early versions of every Android release come out in March. So it's like, you know, everything's so scattered. Do you feel like this feature drop kind of angle is them trying to make the best of a non-ideal situation in terms of how they can use these features to market the Pixel?
Okay, I think the broader discussion here is whether it's better to do one big launch a year or to do it every 3 or do it quarterly. And like in terms of the feature, looking at the first feature drop, I don't think there's like a standout feature that would have headlined the phone. So I don't think it's taking away from the big yearly launch. But the balancing act that Google has to perform will be interesting. Yeah. But yeah, I think this does work better. Well, yearly cycle.
This is the way I feel. Like I feel like these updates and all these features, they happen anyway. They just haven't been called anything until now. I think every year with the Pixel, there's been various updates that slowly drop throughout the year, whether they be assisted features or updates to Google Duo or whatever they may be. They've just never been angled from a marketing perspective as this is a thing, right? Like is Google's Pixel 5, feature list, is it going to have feature drops on? Is that going to be a bullet point? You know, if you buy a Pixel, you will get these branded, I guess, like feature drops every few months. Like, is that going to be, are they going to now try and use this, which is something that's already, in my opinion, been happening as a selling point. And that was my initial reaction was, okay, Google's just, this is purely a marketing thing. This is not Google strategy changing. This is Google just packaging up everything they already do into a neat little box with wrapping paper and a bow and tie, and they're posting it on blog.google, and they're calling it something. And I mean, I don't know, that's kind of how I saw it.
Yeah,
it doesn't feel like a shift in strategy to me.
It's no, like behind the scenes for all these features, I definitely believe the engineering comes first. Like one of the feature drops was Google Duo taking advantage of the 90 hertz display and other algorithms to, if you have a spotty connection, the audio doesn't drop out as bad. And that clearly originated as the Google Duo team being able to work directly on this Pixel 4 hardware for quite a while, I assume. So it's definitely coming from an engineering first. And I guess that speaks to your point about how if this was going to happen anyway, might as well centralize it into quarterly feature drop cycles.
Yeah, and it also is a way for Google to, I mean, what Google really needs is they need reasons for people to buy the Pixel. That's really what it boils down to, is that I mean
yes,
and this is a way for them to double down on timed releases the memory management stuff, for example, is apparently, according to a report this week, I think it was based on quotes from Google via The Verge, that
it will
eventually come to all the Android phones. And it seems like a very a very core piece of Android.
Yeah.
But Google's and I don't know, has Google up to literally this moment in time ever made something so core to Android, such as memory management? Have they ever made that a timed Pixel exclusive until now? I don't think so. I think that usually the things that they've made Pixel exclusive have been a little bit more superfluous. Yeah. And that's kind of my read on this, is like they need more things to kind of nudge the Pixel along or give you more reason.
So another way to view that specific memory management example is that this is giving the Android team a chance to test at scale using Pixel hardware to see how features work before they have to start pulling down. Yeah, so that's an interesting way. That's also another way, interesting way to consider why you're doing feature drops as like an AP. Gigantic A/B test, but
right. But as Ben mentioned in his piece too, like, it's kind of a bummer that the way they angled this article, it obviously highlights these things, that some of them, if not most of them, are Pixel exclusive. Some of them even being Pixel 4 exclusive or timed exclusive. It highlights all these things as being really nice pixel exclusive things. But then on, I guess, the practical side of like, functionally, like, when are you going to get these features? It's all just a big question mark. It's not like you're going to get an update on your phone. It's not like, you know, Apple's is the stark contrast where it's like they push iOS 13.3 and every single phone has it immediately, not to mention the fact that they keep their servers, you know, prepared for something like that. And pretty much everyone can install it without a delay the moment it's released. And it's just kind of a, you know, an immediate on and off switch. Whereas these feature drops, there's no update that you're going to get on your Pixel that is going to suddenly enable all this. And I mean, the closest it gets in this month's case is the December security patch, which is an update that your phone will get, which will be kind of a, you either have it or you don't. But even in that case, for some reason, we've been seeing journalists and plenty of anecdotes of people who don't even have this, the December security patch yet. And so, yeah, it's an unstructured rollout in the first place, but even it's an, it's not just unstructured. It's also unreliable. It's an unreliable, unstructured rollout, which that's just really annoying. And it kind of almost defeats any benefit that could be derived from branding them this way. If that makes, I don't know. Like, I don't know if you feel the same way, but that's my feeling on it.
Yeah, it's, again, this is par for the course for the company, if you really think about it. They haven't, like, they haven't changed anything. They haven't, like, reorged how they're doing, how their engine, how their all their teams are actually working on features and releasing features on the 3 month cycle. And I like, in the broader sense, like, we've, we as Android fans have really preferred Google releasing features when they're ready versus Apple holding features for major tempo releases every year. Sure. So there is that trade-off, but I definitely agree with Ben's article on the idea that it, it would be so much nicer and it would be so much more effective branding for Google to do it all at one go, while keeping the benefits of continuous small feature additions every year. So
yeah, another thing too, this is a sidebar, just really quick, is these, I feel like these security patches have become more than security patches at this point.
Absolutely.
Which is, that's an interesting thing too, is that Google used to do more dot releases of Android, right? There was almost always, there was a 7 and then there was a 7.1, and the 0.1 brought a whole, you know, smorgasbord of minor feature additions that 7 didn't have. And, you know, that goes back to before Google was on an annual number cycle and you know, I guess, what was it? What was before? Before KitKat.
KitKat was...
It doesn't matter. My point is, you know, it used to be like, even the point releases had full, you know, dessert names. And basically they've completely gone the other way now, where it's, they're just doing one, pretty much one major release every year. It seems like, and now the monthly security patches have become more than security patches. And in the case of the Pixel, especially with like the Pixel 3 last year, we saw, you know, like it was a similar situation where like the November, December security patch brought like significant memory management fixes. And it was like, this isn't a security patch. This is a, yeah. I don't know. And I feel like those, it's like, I almost feel like instead of calling them, you know, December security patch, they should almost be Android point releases at this point.
Yeah, at this point. So I guess I have one more broader question, and I think this is going to tie in with the scoops of information we have coming up. But will feature drops So big yearly project launches are flashy, and they attract people's attention. But will feature drops, if Google's plan is to encourage people to keep buying, Pixel phones throughout the year more than when it just launches at the launch of the phone, will feature drops actually attract people's attentions? like they see a feature drop, they learn about the pixel, they see all the new features and the old ones. Is that in enough of an attractor?
I don't think it is, and I don't even think that's the point. I don't even think that's the grander goal. I don't think that there's going to be anyone in a T-Mobile store that's going to say, yeah, you should definitely get the Pixel 4 because it just had its second feature drop, which brought blurred backgrounds to photos that you've already taken in the camera app. That's never a sentence that's going to be said.
So why are they doing this?
I think it's like, I think it can become more than that in the sense that it can become known that versus other Android phones, the Pixel gets really cool features every quarter. And so in that initial push, like I said, I think what might be added is to the Google Store, you know, spec sheet or whatever, there might be feature drops. That might be a feature. The fact that Google is, or the Pixel gets feature drops, is a feature in and of itself. And I think that might be used on an annual basis to try and sell the phone, just like, you know, I think it'll be at least next year before we see something like that materialize, because I don't think Google is going to commit to right now.
A set number.
I think with the Pixel 5, we might see Google mention on stage when the Pixel 5 is announced, by the way, you know, the Pixel phone is special because it gets Google features on a quarterly basis with what we call feature drops, you know, like, or something like that. And it'll still be minor. I'm saying that Rick is going to declare this as the main reason you should buy the Pixel 5. I'm saying, you know, I could see it as a bullet point somewhere. You know, like, we're pressed, so we get, you know, like this year, I think we got a packet that was like 14 things you need to know about the Pixel 4 or whatever. And that's how Google tries to educate the press when they're writing up their press releases or their announcement articles for the phone every year. I could see feature drops being number 14 on that list. You know what I mean?
And so,
I don't think this is going to matter for the Pixel 4 between now and next October, but I think that it might matter for Pixels in the future. As one of many features that are unique.
My outlook of Pixel feature drops is it could be one of two things. This could be nothing, or this could be something. And if Google wants to be something, I think they should go bolder. They should go bigger. They should commit to quarterly feature launches. They should internally be restructuring themselves to do major features every 3 months. Because if this doesn't continue on, this will look really bad if come next year there's not a peep about feature drops, Google just only does one more. Like, I don't know how committed Google is to this concept, or whether this is another case of them trying something out. I do hope it is serious commitment on their part, but the track record doesn't speak to that.
I think this is typical Google being uncommittal and just playing with an idea. And I really do think that's all it is. And we'll see what comes of it. You know, I think we'll probably see a few more of them, because I think that their trial run is going to be once a quarter until the Pixel 5 comes out or something. Like, I don't think that this is going to be the only one, because they clearly laid it out in the blog post, like, this is a thing, right? So it's not just nothing, but it's also, it doesn't seem like this is going to be something they're committing to in the long term as of right now, because Google doesn't make plans. Google just doesn't, they don't plan anything in advance at all. Did you say that was going to segue into our conversations?
Yes.
How is that going to happen?
So how have these phones been selling?
Oh, that makes sense. We don't know. We don't know how well they've been selling.
Historically, we haven't known.
Right. Yeah. I mean, Google doesn't share sales numbers on the Pixel phone. So all the best we get is the earnings call, I guess, you know, once a quarter, where is it Ruth Porat still? I can't remember.
Ruth,
Yeah, Ruth and Sundar maybe drop a little bit of something, you know, like they may drop like a it's selling strongly or it's selling better than we expected. And it's always they only drop tidbits if it's good news.
Well, this year was very, I have to admit, I didn't think Google was going to admit the Pixel 3 sales weren't doing as good.
Yeah.
Yeah. But they did. And I
very briefly and vaguely, but yeah.
They really don't have to if you think about it, but they did.
Yeah, and we don't know how well the Pixel 4 is doing. It could be doing better than the Pixel 3, given that the Pixel 3, according to Google themselves, has done or did so poorly. So I guess the bar is really low. But according to one little birdie that has shared some information with us, who will not be named, and has, I would say, a decent track record. I mean, this is not the most reliable of sources, and so we're sharing this information through that lens, through that filter, I guess. But yeah, apparently the Pixel 4 is not selling as well as they'd hoped, which, you know, you could probably have guessed that based on the wider reception. I mean, Christmas hasn't come yet, so they still don't know what, you know, holiday sales are going to look like. And so things are still tentative and still early. But reception was not very positive. Reviews were not very positive overall. And it doesn't seem like the Pixel in the last couple of years has really picked up much traction in terms of overall pop culture. Or anything really. It seems like it's, if anything, it's heading more to be like over the last couple of years. I feel like it peaked the Pixel 2, and the last couple of years it's kind of like settled into being, you know, relegated to the Nexus kind of I guess reputation. I don't know. Maybe that's a little strong or harsh, but it just doesn't seem like it's picked up as a viable iPhone alternative or even a viable alternative to a lot of its own Android competitors.
Even after getting on all four carriers, which is what else can they do?
Right. It's like, that was like one of the last tricks they had up their sleeve, I guess. But I guess they probably could have predicted that, you know, if they weren't getting traction with all the marketing muscle that Verizon was putting behind it and Verizon making Google one of the three major phone maker tent poles in all their stores, which is like so undeserved. You know, it's like, I think they probably could have predicted that things were not going to be drastically better if they just decided to start selling it in the other major carriers. But yeah, we don't know. But one birdie says, Google Pixel 4 is selling about as well as you would expect based on the reviews. So, thoughts?
It's not surprising. It really isn't. But I guess my main question now is, what can they do to really boost sales? Do they need to go full Samsung and market the heck out of this phone? Because that's the last thing they haven't tried. It kind of speaks to market dominance and market entrenchment. Once you get to Samsung and Apple's positions, there's no getting out. Samsung literally had a phone go on fire a few years ago. And that's an afterthought now. Nobody considered it.
I feel like Rick had a hope that in the wake of LG and HTC meeting their demise, that there would be a little bit of a market there to kind of soak up and they could become that third player. And it just doesn't seem like it's happened if you look at the numbers. And I don't know, it's tough to say exactly. It's tough to really pinpoint any particular reasons why that is. I think it's really easy for people in our field and reviewers especially to be like, oh, well, it's because the phones suck. And I don't think it's that simple. I don't think that's even really true. I mean, it's really easy for a journalist to look at it and say like, Well, they have awful battery life. They have awful battery life. Of course the Pixel 4 is failing because it has awful battery life according to the, or compared to the S10 and the iPhone 11 or whatever. And it's like, I just don't think that that's, that may be one of 50 reasons that it's struggling. Yeah. I think market entrenchment is probably closer to being the bigger picture reason, which is that Apple's dominance is, it's extreme and Samsung's, dominance too. And it's like, it's a very two-sided market.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's like everything else, politics. It's like, what are the chances that a libertarian is going to win in 2020? It's like that. That's the chances that Google Pixel is going to be able to break out in this dualistic market.
It's actually interesting how this kind of replicates the cloud market. Google's other business, Google Cloud, being behind Amazon and Microsoft, Azure in such a significant fact. Like Google is a distant third in both the cloud and phone hardware, since there isn't anyone else competing. Well, OnePlus maybe, but that's not as significant.
Yeah, and the smartphone mobile operating system market is boiled down to two players too, after many attempts to be a third.
Can there be a third? And it's in any industry, increasingly doesn't look like it. That's really unfortunate.
Right. Yeah, that's Pixel 4 sales. In other Pixel 4 news, I guess this is probably what most people have been waiting for. If you have been, thanks for listening for the last 30 minutes as we rambled on about Pixel stuff. But we actually do have some of the very first minor rumors, I guess you could say, about Pixel 4a, which we don't know that that's the name. So this is not us exclusively stating that the Pixel 4 mid-range version is going to be called the Pixel 4a. We don't know. It could be the Pixel 4b or the Pixel 4c, or I don't know. It could be the Pixel 5 for all we know. But this new mid-ranger Pixel 4, presumably the Pixel 4a, I would imagine they would probably stick with the same or similar naming convention given how well the Pixel 3a did. Google itself said that they said that Pixel 3a did, I think they said on the record, right? Yes. They did better than expected.
How to counter the drop in Pixel 3 sales. So they have a good track. They have a good formula, and hopefully they can do it again.
Yeah. So here's the rumor. I guess the first part is this little birdie expects that the Pixel 4a will come in the same time of the year as the Pixel 3a did. So it will be, according to this person, a mid-market mid-cycle release, which would probably mean Google I/O 2020. Wow, it's so weird saying 2020.
Absolutely. And it's fascinating that Google is making that, made by Google, is making, appears to be possibly making that their second hardware event of the year. It's very
odd.
It's very odd in terms of Google I/O as something for developers. But again, increasingly, it's been their one presentation to get on the nightly news to show everybody what Google's doing. So I guess they might as well take it.
Yeah. And it's already heavily pressed. And so, you know, if you want bodies on the ground to see stuff, it's easy to show stuff there because all of the press are already there. So it makes logistical sense. So Google I/O 2020, which we will hopefully be at. Interestingly, the second little tidbit of information we have about the Pixel 4a is that apparently this version of this, I guess, mid-ranger will be kind of creeping up a little bit in price versus last year. So last year's phone, started at $379?
No, okay. Yes, $399 and $479. I never got the $80 price for the 3A XL, but
yeah, better. So we don't know what these prices are going to look like exactly, but our little birdie says to expect very similar, if not slightly increased. So they're positing $399 for the Pixel 4a and $499 for the Pixel 4a XL, which, man, those names are still a mouthful.
The A doesn't stand for anything.
Yeah. But neither does 10R or yes. Galaxy 10E.
Yeah, I guess. Yeah.
S10E.
Oh, well. Yeah.
So, yeah, these letters don't mean anything. But, yeah, that's all we've got on Pixel 4a. Be sure to leave some comments, I guess, in the live stream or at the article over at 95google.com if you have any questions, because we're going to try and dive in more on Pixel 4a in the coming weeks and months, obviously, as it nears launch. But that's your first tidbit on Pixel 4a. So yeah, what do you think about Pixel 4a? I mean, it's nothing really all that surprising.
No, it's I am curious what they decide to take from the Pixel 4, the camera being the biggest question. It's I could see them going ahead with just keeping a single camera, to be honest, but I guess they'll double down on the new Google Assistant. I'm sure will be a flagship of the phone, which will be the first expansion. But again, the camera, it would be interesting whether they keep the dual aspect. But yeah,
what do you think they can do on the external design standpoint? Like it feels like the design of the 4 is pretty close to what I would expect the successor to the 3A to be. Do you think we'll see another phone with notable top and bottom bezels? Because a lot of mid-rangers in the $399, $499 price range are starting to look like flagships in terms of screen real estate and bezel size and stuff like that. You think they're going to stick with the old school look again?
If they get rid of bezels, I think that completely rules out doing them switching away from like a plastic back on the current 3A. If I guess people do care more about having no bezels on their phone versus having their back being interesting, because the glass panel is very nice on the Pixel 4. But I assume for cost saving measures, Google will probably just opt for another plastic back. But that also adds the question of how they keep a consistent design language, whether the 3A is like a branch off point and that all mid-range hardware will be building off the 3A, or whether the 4, or whether it will be inspired by the Pixel 4. Which is, they could go either direction, and they could make their A line of phones could definitely have their own visual distinction. Next question is
I was just going to say, it was easy to do that with the 3 and the 3A, because all they had to do is just take the current design and make it plastic.
Yeah.
And they did a good job of it too.
Yeah, they did a good, I prefer holding the Pixel 3A to the Pixel 3. And to that question, is there going to be face unlock on the next Pixel 4? Is Sori and that sensor stack expensive to put on a mid-ranger?
Yeah, I mean, if there's anything, I would guess they're gonna drop from the 4A. It'll probably be solely the second camera. I think they're gonna do no glass, obviously. And I think that it makes sense that if I were to guess what the kind of display situation is going to be, I would guess that it's going to be a similar setup to the Pixel 4. Because I don't see any other option. I mean, I don't see them doing a notch again. And at this price point, you know, it's like, are they going to make a device that looks more modern than the 4 at half the price? I don't think so. I mean, you would think they would save their modern striking designs for their flagships, which doesn't seem to be what they've done ever, but you know, it's like the 3A definitely looked a little bit more dated than the 3, or slightly. I would guess that the 4A is going to be a very similar situation with a full top bezel. But then, you know, they ditch the Soli sensor, and then that kind of becomes a little bit of a
move. I think they keep face unlock. They do face unlock without Soli. I'm not sure how hard it is to untangle those two. But I think they can just do basic face unlock without any of the motion awareness features.
Yeah, that might be what they do. Or they could do fingerprint, which, you know, if they put fingerprint and a headphone jack on it. So what else should we talk about? We're kind of hitting a brick wall here. It's Christmas time, so it's Christmas time. It's holiday time.
So glass, which might be the final time, honestly.
This might be our last So Glass.
I kind of think it is. So last Friday, it was quite re-emerged that Google is going to stop. They're going to kill the backend servers at one glassware. Am I correct in that terminology? Glass apps, basically. They're going to stop running the servers up since 2017, 2016, kept on running.
Well, so, most of the apps were already dead.
Yes.
I mean, Glass has a built-in Google Plus app.
Google Plus sharing. I remember picking a circle to send, to share an image with. Classic.
Yeah. I know you just itched your eye, but what you really did was you shared an image on Google Plus. if you're listening to the podcast, you missed it. But
Hangouts is obviously on the way out. Gmail going away is a bit sad, actually.
Yeah. Yeah. And you have yours, right?
Yeah.
Is it dead, sitting in a drawer, or?
It's in the drawer. Yes, it's uncharged. The drawer.
I was going to ask you before the show. I was going to ask you what works. Yeah.
No, the last time I used it, I got Gmail notifications, though I'm not sure if those were just me off my phone or whether the specific integration Google is talking about is like sending emails, like send this email, this picture to so-and-so, which I'm probably leaning towards that. But anyways, going forward, Google is going to cut off those backend services. And what you'll essentially be able to do is just use it as a camera to record videos. Developers can still sideload apps. And all this is going to work over Bluetooth. So I'm actually kind of curious how you're going to send pictures, how picture transfer is going to work. But another thing that they're going to do is they issued one last software update. So if you're signed out of your Google account, or like as in you've reset it and you just have Glass stuck in a drawer, you need to sideload it. You need to flash this update in order to be able to pair it to your phone and like still get around and skip the sign-up process. But yeah, that's how many years of software support was that? 4, 5, around 5 years.
Yeah, not bad. I mean, that's a very generous support, but yeah.
Yeah, it stopped after 2, but $300 a year. Was that a good investment for anybody who bought it?
Well, let's see how much Google Glass Explorer Edition in decent condition is going for currently on eBay. Current buy it now or best offer for used Google Glass Explorer Edition in tangerine. Remember that was the color.
The best orange color.
Tangerine. With the sunglasses attachment and the earbud and the carrying pouch, which had that very large, like, hard section at the bottom to protect the
box. They made a big deal of it about being Japanese silk or something.
Something like that. It looks like the buy it now price for Explorer Edition is around $450 right now, which is not, I mean, it's held its value pretty well.
Yeah, good. Yeah.
That's like not bad. That's like, it's like still expensive enough that I feel like not many people would pay that. Like, I don't know.
That's crazy. Would you get that or would you get Snapchat spectacles?
I would get none of it.
Yeah.
There's nothing compelling in the AR space right now at all.
No, but the camera, my favorite part of glass is still being able to take pictures very quickly. And that still gets to work on this very low res 8 megapixel, on this very bad 5 megapixel or 8 megapixel camera. It's a shame.
Yeah. I can't remember a single photo. Actually, I will say this. There was not a single photo I took on glass in the year or so that I used it on and off that I still have. Because I don't think it ever captured a photo that was decent enough not to trash. It did get some decent video, though. So, yeah, whatever. So, yeah, rip glass. It's final. Finally, completely rip.
Yeah.
This is the Google Glass is now a collector's item update.
That's true. That's very true.
It's not really leaving you with much functionality. What about Stadia? That's been a hot topic in the last few weeks for us because no one else is covering it, really. It works. I guess now we can say, you know, a few months in, it works. It's decent. It's good. I still haven't used your Buddy Pass. I'm ashamed to admit. I'll get to it. I'll have thoughts. I promise. But it seems like it's been decently well received, which that's one question that was still left unanswered. It's the subscription model and the way they charge for games and the way things currently work with the Founders Edition is a little bit confusing and not really practical or ideal, I think, for most people, because paying $50 for a game that's all digital that you may or may not have access to in a couple of years is kind of still a little bit scary. So having access to Pro and those free games is particularly nice for those that got Founders Edition. But yeah, I mean, you got to see a Stadia
pop-up? Holiday pop-up, yes, in Hollywood yesterday. This was the first. This week they did Los Angeles, London, and Paris tomorrow. So if anybody visits that, do share how it is. But yeah, it's a pop up in that there's a very tiny, they cordoned off a very tiny section of the mall, literally on Hollywood Walk of Fame, and they had three plastic tents where they recreated living rooms and you could try out Stadia to the public. It's always interesting to see, like, for all pop-ups, like, anywhere, people will just come up and ask what this is and they'll try it and there isn't too much of a line. There was, like, a very medium line yesterday, so I think there was a lot of average people just cheering around Hollywood getting a chance to try out Stadia. And my thoughts on it is that it's very important that Google that does this, because unlike all the pop-ups they've done for smart speakers, for assistant devices, for Pixel phones, this, nobody knows what the game streaming service is, and this is a very foreign concept. And this, with Google, with its wanting to reach the next billion gamers, this is something they need, this outreach, this physical outreach in the world, is something they really need to get people in on, at least until they release the free version of Stadia or they allow demos where you could just click any link and you enter a game. So with that, like with this holiday season, especially since Google is pushing for Stadia to be something you buy people, which is Kyle had a pros and cons of that article last week. It's Google Query is going full steam ahead on advertising Stadia in the world. And if anything, this kind of maybe Google should just make a store. I know this has been an age-old question, but with Google, this company that's doing futuristic things and new things and innovating on that front, they might as well make stores where they can actually push this stuff. It's not going to be the Apple store in the way that the Microsoft store isn't the Apple store. But if
I feel like people, that's contingent on their phone mattering.
On their phone mattering?
Yeah.
Yeah, because they do get a lot of Best Buy, speakers and assistant devices and cameras. That kind of stuff is so home appliancey that anybody can really take care of it. But I think a Google store in general just help with them anytime they need to do something new, which is for Google is more likely than not. So could be something.
Possibly.
But yeah, Stadia works. The demos that they had on the streets worked, and no, people liked it. They like trying new things, and I do genuinely believe they can appreciate playing online games in a web browser. And I think that does help Google's case in actually selling these things, in convincing people to try out this form of gaming.
Yeah, something else happened this week that is also making the service a little bit more attractive, which was Destiny, which is a really, really popular game. If not it's one of the most popular games available right now, AAA titles at least. And apparently, people took note that Stadia players were able to immediately access the most recent update, while players on consoles struggled to install it at all.
Yeah,
that was a good PR moment for Google, I think.
They didn't really push it as hard as I thought it would be. Maybe not yet, but
yeah, this was, I wanna brag too soon.
Yeah, it was a genuine win for them, and it proved their concept working at scale. Again, we don't know how many actual Stadia users there are. I'm personally of the opinion between 150 and 200,000. That's based on how many installs of the Stadia app there are. I feel like 150 sounds about right, 200 at the max, especially when you consider that the Founders Edition should basically count for two with the Buddy Pass.
So yeah.
I think would be a promising amount for Google to start with. And again, they're pushing it this holiday season. So people, they maybe even those who are less tech savvy, they see Stadia, they see games, they know somebody who likes games. It's only $129. They might give it to somebody this holiday season. And it's not a bad place to be in, a la Google's entire approach with Chromecast being highly affordable.
One last tidbit of news. Today, it was pretty much confirmed that RCS is now available on pretty much every Google, every phone with Android messages in the United States.
Yes, in the US. Correct? Yes.
So that's a big watershed moment for RCS a little bit, I guess.
Yeah, it just took them a month, less than a month really, to pull it out. And yeah, it's here. That's, again, arguably the US is the most important market for this in terms of people who are still using SMS, MMS adoption.
Yeah.
I'm really curious what this does to the carrier initiative. Maybe they'll still release it. Maybe the big four carriers won't be as vigorous and all that. But this definitely has to dent like Google's plans first.
Yeah. Yeah, I'd like to hear from people who use Messages. If you use Messages as your primary messaging app and you have RCS and you primarily talk to Android users, like your friends are primarily Android users, I would love to hear from people like how widely rolled out RCS is as of now. But I'd also like to hear in the coming weeks how that goes, because we know that a huge number of Android users are not going to have RCS for a while still, even with Google pulling the trigger on this.
The issue is that I honestly doubt Google is going to advertise this. Regular people see a prompt in the app, in the Messages app, to upgrade their chat. I honestly don't know what the quick way through that is. Like this adoption. Google, one, is not going to advertise this because they can't anger, they can't upset the carrier partners too actively. So this is wholly word of mouth and how RCS adoption spreads. And would a Google advertising campaign actually help to get RCS adoption out there is my question.
No, because there's no way for them to advertise it. There's no way. Because how do they convey the distinction between phones that have messages installed by default and phones that don't? You know, it's there's but it's like if you make the message download messages app, then it sounds like Google's advertising their own messaging app. Like that's really what this becomes. It becomes a Google first party messaging solution that happens to be powered by the RCS standard. Whereas that's not the message that Google wants to send.
I'm just saying this is a company that use advertised Allo with a grilled cheese sandwich truck. So I think they'll try anything.
I don't think that's the case with this. I think that this is Google deciding to pull the trigger early on this was just it was a nudge. That's all it was. Nudge to the carriers saying, hey, we're on board. We're going to do this. You've promised to do it. Let's just do this, guys. That's what Google's saying to them.
Yeah.
Let's just do this. And we're going to live that out by doing it ourselves. So we got a few more minutes left for the show. And we're just going to drop one last little tidbit for those of you who are dedicated hardcore listeners who are sticking with us to the end of the show. Or noticed a little tidbit in the headline, which we haven't mentioned yet. I kind of did this on purpose and Abner didn't know that. So now he's pestering me, telling me that we have to talk about this. But we don't really have any details, but we've heard that there's a Fuchsia tablet, which this feels like flashbacks to like 2016, whenever we reported that there was a Huawei made, and we still believe that this actually was a thing. It just never came out. Actually, I'm pretty confident that it was a thing and never came out. That back then we were, it was different. There were two different projects inside Google to pursue this idea that all phones or all devices should run the same operating system. And one of those projects, and this is before Chrome OS, really before the first Pixel Book.
Chrome OS was very bare bones.
This is far before Chrome OS started to expand and before they added Android apps and a lot of things. There was internally a project known as Andromeda, and we were pretty decently sourced on this. And I know David at Android Police was too, and I'm still pretty confident that it was a thing. And we reported that there's a Huawei tablet that Google is working on that would run this. Anyways. Now we're telling you, and this is not even the level of confidence that we had back then about something that ended up not happening. So take that for what you will. But apparently Google is working on a Fuchsia or a tablet that will run Fuchsia. Or there maybe is a tablet made by another company that's not Google. We don't know who it's made by. But as there has been many times over the last, I guess, several months, going on years now, many devices we've found have been tested and tried with Fuchsia. One of the most notable you might be familiar with is the original Google Nest Hub and the Nest Hub Max. Both have been tested internally with Fuchsia. There have been some phones that we know have been tested, or Fuchsia has been tested on some tablets. Or have there been tablets yet? I don't know. Kyle would have to speak to this if you were on the show. Maybe we should have brought him on for this little tidbit. But apparently, Google, it sounds to me, based on this tip, that Google's working on a first-party tablet that of some kind.
Going down from that, a developer something, like a developer platform or
something.
Something like that.
We do know that Google's first-party hardware division has decided that they're not going to do tablets anymore. I mean, that's the official on-the-record kind of... stamp on that. So we're not contradicting that and saying that that's wrong and suddenly now made by Google is working on a tablet for next year. It's definitely no. Actually, Kyle just pinged me and said, definitely no, there have not been any tablets found in Fuchsia source code.
Yeah.
So, the closest thing was Pixelbook so far. So this would be the first tablet that we've known Fuchsia to be tested on. So who knows? Maybe this is yet another Google, I guess,
test. Next generation OS project.
Yes. We don't know what any of that means. Still really early, but we'll just leave that with you and leave that with anyone out there who has an ear for these kinds of things who may know more than we do. And our email address is gtips@9to5g.com or steven@9to5mac.com or abner@9to5mac.com or kyle@9to5mac.com. We're all ears. We'd love to hear from you about this. Because
let's get this rumor cycle started.
Yeah, let's get 2020 made by Google rumors going. But yeah, we'll leave the show there. That's pretty much all we have for you today. Thanks for tuning in. You can tune in to Alphabet Scoop here every week. We record this podcast on Thursdays lately. We've been publishing on Friday mornings. You can find us on all your favorite podcasting platforms, such as Pocket Cast, Google Podcasts, Google Play Music, which we don't know what's going to happen to that. It's still in limbo, probably dying soon. iTunes and Apple Podcasts, and you can also listen directly over at 9to5google.com. Thanks for tuning in, as always, again, and thanks to Abner for joining me. We'll see you next week.